So, the MVP, am I right?
Yes, MVP.
MVP. What does it stand for?
Most valuable product.
Oh, product. Nice. I think it's player, but...
Most valuable player. MVP. Most valuable player.
Yes. Yes. Yes, correct.
Ding, 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 ding.
You win absolutely nothing.
That's too bad.
Yes, but MVP, it's a minimal viable product. Yeah, I think most listeners know MVP from minimal viable product versus most valuable player, but...
It's interesting that they have the exact same abbreviation, and depending on the context, it means completely different things.
Yeah, but I think like you can already... Yeah,
come on, man.
Assume what's it about.
I don't know. I've come across both of them, and it's...
Are you an MVP?
I'm the MVP of this company, and I build MVPs.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, MVP is a changing term, I guess, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it? Because we've read this blog post on the Linear app blog post. You guys know Linear?
Yeah, we'll probably link it in the description if we think about it. Don't forget it, I mean.
And I think we share a lot of the same sentiments, and we want to just go over the blog post because I think in our history of development, we've talked and you know, worked with people who had a different opinion of what MVP is and how you apply the concept of MVP.
Yeah.
And it's cool to just check what MVP nowadays means.
Yeah.
Is it still the same concept as it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Yeah. And just to like quickly recap, I guess, what exactly MVP is, I guess, like most people have probably seen an image linked to MVP. It was like a skateboard going through a scooter, or how do you call it? It's a scooter, I guess, to a bike. Oh, yes, it's a skateboard, scooter, bike, then a motorbike, and then a car, I guess. And that's like the end product.
Damn.
Yeah. And a lot of times you see that image, and then the alternative is like one wheel, two wheels, and a frame.
Yep.
Then two wheels and a car frame, and then like the end product finally. So the whole idea is that from the start you have something that you can use, I guess. I mean, you can...
A fully functioning product, but it's still... It brings you from one point to another.
Yeah.
It can transport you. That's the main function, but it still is lacking some features or lacking some like polish.
Yeah.
Right? That's the takeaway of that image. That MVP, if you apply it correctly, you'll be happy along the entire process of developing that project.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use the classic waterfall, you might build parts of your product that are really important for the end product, but along the way you can't really use any of it because it's not cohesive, it's not connected.
Yeah. So from start to finish you have something that's at least usable in a way, even if it lacks the features you need or want, I guess.
Something that struck me a bit out of context, but a skateboard has a completely different purpose.
I think that's also why this image is also, it doesn't work as well.
Maybe. It's to me, like a skateboard sounds like you're just going outside having fun, and it's meant for leisure. It's not for transportation. Nobody, well, there are some people who use it as a main mode of transport.
It's the same with the scooter, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think anyone, well, there are people I know.
Electronic scooters.
Yeah. But
within the city.
Yeah, I guess, maybe. But like these are all, a lot of these steps are like short distance travel intended, right? So if your end goal is to create something that can travel great distances, then like from the motorbike part, that's when it starts getting, you know, usable.
Yeah.
Actually usable.
It's an interesting metaphor because it kind of works on the concept of features.
Yeah.
Like comfort almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like skateboard is the least comfortable, kind of clunky to use. A step, you can at least hold on to it.
Yeah.
You only have to use one foot. Well, a skateboard technically also, but it's like more stable.
Mm-hmm.
It's more
easier to steer at least.
Yeah,
so that's
as well.
Yeah.
And then the bike is, well, you can go way faster and you can
Further.
Yeah, and further. It's interesting because to me the first time I saw this image, I was just taken away. Like it distracted me that it was like from fun to something functional, which might not even be fun. And
yeah,
you can get into like a situation with like traffic jams with a car. It's yeah. like you had different issues along the path, and mm-hmm. maybe that's also part of the point of that image.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's like, I don't know. I think this comparison, I mean, I get why they use it, but I also don't really get why. Because
yeah,
like if the end user expects a car and they get a skateboard, you know, that's not what? Like
they wouldn't be happy.
No one's going to be happy about that.
But we can at least travel a bit. That's the concept, right?
That is the concept, yeah. But still, I don't know if it really works if you apply it to tech, to be honest, a lot of times. But
it's an interesting thought process. I think the biggest thing is, what is the main function of your app?
Yeah.
And can you prototype that? Can you apply that in your product from the start?
Yeah.
And is it viable to go at least a certain distance?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that is like the main takeaway of this image. It's the function is moving from one place to another.
Yeah.
If that's
the goal, yeah. I don't know. I think you could also just do like a bunch of different cars, right? So from the first, you have like a normal car that's not very efficient, but you know, it drives around. It might break down, you know, sometimes, but you'll fix it, and then you can keep going.
Like an old school 1960s car or something that you patched up.
Yeah, exactly. And then like the next step is like, hey, a bit more modern car, and it's like, you know, a bit more fuel efficient, but you know,
comfortable.
It's comfortable, but it's still not perfect. And then you go up another class, you're like, I don't know, electric vehicle, I guess.
Whoa.
But you know, it has reduced range, so it's like, I don't know. I think that works.
At the end, it's just Uber Eats. You don't have to travel anywhere.
That, I mean,
Uber Eats. We're not sponsored by you.
Maybe, you know, they hear this.
Why travel? You can get everything from the from your seat.
Yeah.
Just go on the internet, put on your Apple Vision Pro.
You
just zone out.
You don't even have to travel.
But that is a really cool idea, what you just described. It's maybe that is what the current thought process is of MVP.
Yeah.
It is, you don't start with something that is a minimal viable product.
Yeah.
It's something that is already comprehensive enough, like competitive enough.
I mean, that's what this article talks about, right?
Yeah. So what used to be the definition of MVP?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to, you know, find it, I guess. But we remember from the early days, I guess. We're old farts, so we know. But what I always learned as an MVP is just like something that's, you know, it works. And it's fine, but that's it. Like, it's very bare minimum.
Okay.
So on a technical level, let's say you have an application, I guess, and you know, you can sign in, you can do very basic, you know, stuff that the application needs to do, and that's it. Like, you know, it works. And maybe visually it looks like shit. Maybe technically it doesn't work properly, but that's it, right?
Yeah. I think when I remember what my first MVPs were, they were kind of like prototypes. The main so we would focus on the unique selling points. We would have a list of USPs.
Mm-hmm.
We would have, I'm going to be honest, we would already be doing research about what the competitors are doing with those unique selling points, and we would check if those USPs, if they are already available at other competitors.
Yeah.
If they are, then we have to either be like qualitatively better with those USPs, or we have to think of new ones, honestly, because they're not unique.
Yeah.
So we would focus on something that a product that has features that are unique or they are innovative, that they, if you would compare them to another product in the similar category, they would outshine them.
Yeah.
But to be honest, we would just have a rethought idea.
Yeah.
So for example, data processing or something.
Mm-hmm.
If you would think of data processing and visualizing the data, you might end up with something like an Excel sheet. And how do you process that? How do you visualize that? Can you like graph that out? Can you have a dashboard with an interface that can take certain points out of it with AI or something. Mm-hmm. So you can innovate on that point where, yeah, data processing is already an established market, but you might think of a niche or create a niche where you use AI, for example, to graph out the data automatically, and you would see patterns quicker, and it would be highlighted in your sheets. So that is, for me, for example, a concept of MVP, where you take something that is completely new or something that already exists and add a new twist to it.
Yeah, and I think MVP used to be a lot more like, let's just try something completely different and just do it as quickly as possible so we can try it out. Like if people like this, and if it didn't work, you just, you know, cancel the whole thing and just move on with your life. But
I just wanted to note that MVPs were synonymous to startups, honestly. It used to be that if you thought of a startup, they would have a product. The first product they would ever have is an MVP.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If you as a team would create an MVP, you're probably a startup.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not an established company, a software company that has established products.
Yeah.
And I think what really got people on the MVP train is when established companies notice that workflow of like creating something real quick and throwing it out in the wild and seeing if other users like latch onto it and it's actually a viable product, you know, then maybe that's a more efficient way of developing.
I'm not sure if it's like more efficient developing, to be honest. Like, I think a lot of companies, especially like, I don't know, agencies, for example, or like, you know, who build multiple of these websites and applications, I think they used MVP as a way to quickly show something to a client, you know?
Like, yeah, it's like a prototype.
Yeah, but like instead of investing a lot of time and money in something, they could just make something very basic and simple and say like, hey, but look, you know, we are making something and it works.
So it's also a way to satisfy your customer.
Yeah, it's like when you're, I don't know, pitching for a client, for example, if you can pitch multiple ways, but if you pitch with a complete design, you know, sure, you have to invest a lot of time in that, but that will also probably, you know, win someone over easier than if you don't.
Yeah.
Even though there are a lot of drawbacks to that, because, you know, making a design before you even know the product, but whatever.
That's an interesting point. Maybe MVP was also just used for that, to make sales, kind of.
Yeah, I truly believe too, like with products or like with startups, I guess, MVP is great for getting more investors, right? If you have something that at least works, you can show that to investors and say like, hey, you know, we can build more of this if you pay us money.
There's hype around this.
Yeah.
We can piggyback it.
But yeah, I don't know. It kind of got, it feels like it got misused in a bit by a lot of companies because, you know, it was the thing to do and it was an easy way to earn more money, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same with like Scrum and Agile a lot of times, right? Because that also doesn't really work a lot of times for agencies, for example, or like, I don't know, some websites.
We've talked about Scrum and Agile a lot.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in those topics, just maybe look up the word Agile within our podcast episodes. But just to recap, so I would say MVP as we knew it before used to be more about speed and timing.
Yeah.
It would be just like create the minimum viable product as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And throw it out there into the wild and adjust after initial launch. The minimum viable product was focused on the minimum viable.
Yeah.
Like that part was really important back in the day where you were focusing on timing and speed that much that you would, you know, forget about certain features.
Yeah.
They weren't even needed to have to gain awareness of users and actually gain users.
Yeah. Throw something out there, like
But it used to be a really good way. For example, Airbnb, they didn't know if people were ready for an app where you can find a place and you could sleep at that stranger's house. Mm. And they would just, in 2009 or something, they just launched their app. I think there was there a wait list? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
We'll talk about wait lists and like invite only stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Airbnb, and I think maybe it was Uber also part of it. I'm not sure.
Might be, yeah. I'm not sure. Like most of those companies are all startups. So
yeah,
we're all startups.
So there it is again, the association of startup and MVP.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be synonymous. If you had a startup, they were working on MVP.
Yeah, and they were all like, you know, new things. Like no one
concepts that were completely new to the market.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's why where an MVP works.
Yeah.
Because it's something completely new and you don't want to, you know, invest a lot of time and money in something you're not even sure the people are interested in.
Yeah. And that used to be the definition of MVP as well.
Yeah.
So I think with the modern way of how you look at MVPs, it's a bit more comprehensive.
Yeah.
You need to do a few more things before you launch your product.
Yeah.
And so even after launch.
Yeah, of course. So I think like, this article is talking a lot about like why MVP doesn't work as it used to. And I mean, the main reason, I mean, we'll talk through it, I guess, but the main reason for it is that a lot of things are already made, you know, they already exist.
Yep.
So if you start building another Airbnb, for example, you know, you don't have to rush to be first or something, you know. Yep. You have to find something that's outperforms or is better than Airbnb. So that requires a very different mindset and way of working compared to the old ways of the MVP model.
Yeah. And maybe the term viable,
mm-hmm.
what is viable nowadays?
Yeah.
You know, like if you're launching a product in an already established market,
mm-hmm.
something that is minimally viable is a complete different thing than a new concept, then the minimum viability of that concept of that product is, can it do its main thing? can it actually achieve what you're selling? And with the MVP nowadays, you're not only doing that,
mm-hmm.
you're also competing with others directly. And so if Airbnb, for example, if you're starting a new product in that market, then it has to at least compete with Airbnb and be, you know, viable as an alternative to Airbnb.
I mean, it should even be better, right?
Yeah.
If you want to convince people to switch mm-hmm. or, you know, not use Airbnb, I guess.
So that's where I would say in my mind, there's like two ways to go at it. You mm-hmm. could say that all the features or some of the features are better than Airbnb, or you could say they're very similar or maybe worse, but there is still a unique selling point to your current, like your new product that you launch in the Airbnb market.
Yeah. Maybe it should be called MCP, like minimum competitive product.
Ooh.
Wow.
But yeah, to be fair, like when we create products and in a lot of situations you have a client mm-hmm. that is requesting like a relaunch or a redesign of their app or website.
Yeah.
And if you have agencies that create MVPs
mm-hmm.
for those kind of projects where there was already an established or a product that already was created and they have users,
mm-hmm.
your next iteration of that product, can it be a minimum viable product or should it be at least?
It's going to be worse, right?
If you focus on the way that MVP used to work,
mm-hmm.
You're going to miss out on a lot of features because if you're going to launch it as soon as possible
mm-hmm.
and test it out, it's already in an established place.
Yeah.
And your clients or your the users that use your product, they're going to be missing a lot of features.
Yeah. I think one issue that also, you know, happens a lot with agencies at least is that an agency sells like a redesign, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they might not even rethink like the features a website or web application has to do, right?
It's just a visual redesign.
Yeah, exactly. So if you deliver an MVP with a new design, like, and you lack all the features because you've been focusing on the redesign, you know, nice that it looks better than before, I guess, but it doesn't work as it used to. So
with the redesign also comes how far can you stretch that redesign?
Yeah.
A lot of designs are based on around features mm-hmm. of the app.
Yeah.
If you're redesigning something, you can maybe adjust the borders, mm-hmm. the spacing, the font, the shadows maybe.
Yeah.
But will you be able to actually change the flow and the UX? Mm-hmm. I think a good design company would adjust that.
Yeah.
But that can still be applied to the previous version.
Yeah.
So you don't have to recode all the whole code base. Mm-hmm. You can just do like a CSS and like moving some components to different pages, making the flow different. It's an interesting concept where agencies who sell a redesign use MVP as their main work method.
Mm. Yeah, again, I think like it gets misused, just like Agile and Scrum in a way. It's just a way to create like uncertainty for our clients and find a way to get more money out of them.
Yeah.
Sounds very scummy, but you know, that's how the world works. So
if I want to rehash it a bit, it used to be very important to launch your product as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays it's about the quality and value of your product. Yep. It has to outperform the alternatives in a lot of situations.
Or bring something like very unique to the table compared to competitors.
And I have here creating a compelling product that draws in the early users in order to gather feedback that you can then use to sharpen the product into the best version of many.
Yeah.
So the process is a bit different. It's a lot different.
Yeah. Instead of like creating something very simple and, you know, opening the floodgates, I guess you're trying to, you know, slowly gather users with a high quality product, I guess. And then, you know, allow entry more and more to more users.
And it seems to be very focused on iterative development.
Yeah.
Because even from the initial point of developing and creating an app, you're focusing on a certain small target audience.
Yeah.
Because how do you, like, it used to be maybe that you just launch it to the public initially, and then you just open the floodgates, as you said, and you just gather feedback maybe and adjust it. But if you're creating a product that is competing with other products, you have to at least have a competitive product where you outperform the other companies or other software.
Yeah.
So how do you know that you can outperform them? Is it based on your own research? And how do you do that? So MVP is, I think in this case, kind of a cool concept where you don't like keep it all hidden. Maybe that's like the main takeaway for me. It's MVP is still viable as a method of creating or developing software if you use it as a way to research your product before you launch it officially.
Yeah.
And I think that is like a huge conceptual difference in what MVP was before for me.
Yeah.
MVP was like if you launch it as soon as possible and it's a new concept, you can like shock the world with, whoa, what the hell is this concept?
Yeah, and own that market, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now it's more like we research it thoroughly and we let in other people, and kind of it almost is like a method of virally creating a target audience.
Yeah.
To me, it's more like you're working with your target audience to create something that they want.
Yeah, I think it's like you have to build a community around something, right? Yeah.
That's also like, I think, a really misunderstood and hard part of creating software nowadays. Mm. It is not just creating a compelling product that's completely unique.
Yeah.
You still have to have an audience that wants to use your product, and you don't launch it into like the emptiness of space and hopefully somebody gets your radio signal from across the universe.
Yeah, and even then, like, I think in the earlier days, I guess you could do that, right? You could just launch a product
if it's completely new concept.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think right now you need to create like a connection with your users more than what you used to.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to, you know, talk with them, ask them questions, and like, you know, work together on something to get them invested and, you know, spread the word, I guess.
Like all these missionaries.
Yes.
Like the belief of the religion of your app.
The MVP.
Yeah. It's like the religion of Airbnb or something, where you have missionaries who get sent out automatically. Like, hey, have you heard of the Airbnb?
I mean, especially with like Airbnb stuff, you really need a community and, you know, people who are really dedicated to it, because, you know, you have hosts who are like, you know, giving their house away, kind of.
It's kind of a...
There are a lot of risks for everyone who uses the platform, I think. So
that too. It's more of a... To me, it almost sounds like you have to have a community that wants to adjust their lifestyle a bit
fits that lifestyle already. Yeah.
And that's like, it goes really deep how software nowadays will change your lifestyle or complement your lifestyle in a way.
Yeah.
And people are looking for software, even as a professional. You can think of your professional life as a certain lifestyle. Some people still use paper for creating graphs and keeping track of the project, and others use like Jira, or maybe some others use like Notepad. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's all these methods of management and keeping track of things, and that all combines into a work lifestyle. And I think when you're creating products, you have to be aware of all these different methods of work lifestyles.
Yeah.
And find your target audience that is looking for software that is, you know, complementing their lifestyle in that way.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting concept, where it used to be, you know, we used to hear this a lot even back in the day, where software created by developers for developers, or created by designers for designers.
Yeah.
You know, where you actually, in your marketing and in your unique selling points, you create the image of that, you know what the user wants because you are the user.
Yeah.
And maybe that's also a really good way to start an MVP. It's when you notice there's a lack of a certain feature set or certain thing. Yeah.
That's also a difference, I guess, with MVP right now and in the early days, right? Because right now you already know the users, kind of.
Sure.
Because you can just, you know, if you start in Linear's example, for example, it's an issue tracker. So you'll start looking at users who use Jira or something else, you know. But if you were the first to create something like this, then you have to search your audience in a way.
Yeah. And in the blog post, they also mentioned that they were their own, like they could create. So like how they started Linear was not even like as a competitor. They had a client as a software company. They had a client who needed some form of tracking within their app. Mm-hmm. So they had like a dashboard for their client and they needed some form of tracking.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to, you know, have a third party software like Jira to keep track of their whatever, the steps they had in their project.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a really good way to test out your like actual like old school MVP concept, where you create something just good enough for the client to be working with, and then taking that, stripping that apart from the other parts of the dashboard and making that your main thing.
Well, I also think like building something that you yourself like really need and will use, you know, that's also a very good thing, because you're not alone. You're probably not the only person who needs something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So it's kind of the same concept, except for they could actually already sell it.
Yeah.
You're creating something
the dream,
for
I guess.
Yeah. If you are in a position where you're creating something for a client that you can also like strip away from the rest of the product and sell that as its own thing. You know, you have to have your licenses in order and your contracts in order to be able to do that. But that's how, apparently that's how Linear started.
Mm-hmm.
It's they took the, I don't remember exactly what part, but they took a part of what Linear is nowadays that was built into an app for the client, and they made it a separate thing and they built around that.
Yeah, I mean, they probably also saw that Jira was just bad. So they were like, let's see how we can improve this.
Yeah. I mean, they probably, as a decently sized software company, you are using project management software.
Yeah, you have to. I mean.
And, well, it was a pain before. Linear is actually really good. And again, we're not sponsored by Linear or anything, but
you know,
hey, if you're listening, anyone from Linear,
yeah, you can sponsor us.
Yeah, we would gladly share the word of Linear.
Yes.
I think let's go to the next step. So after you've conceptualized what the product should be based on, you know, either competitors or you have a completely new project concept.
Yeah.
How do you gain users?
Mm-hmm.
And the blog post talks about how you can leverage your community if you have a social media presence.
Yeah.
If you have maybe people in your network who are leaders, as they say, in the communities. Mm-hmm. So you could, I know some influencers that are in kind of like, I would say adjacent markets.
Yeah.
They would be able to maybe share the word of a software that we're creating.
I mean, this is, I think, one of the hardest parts, right? Finding an audience, or not finding an audience necessarily, yeah. But I mean, like creating a user base that's, you know, is interested.
It could be either really, you could get really lucky, but yeah. You have to know what channels you're using.
Exactly, yeah.
And you have to also put in work. It's not something that will happen automatically.
No.
Again, the example I gave before where, you know, trying to find a different civilization in the universe and you're just sending out radio signals,
mm-hmm.
by the time it arrives, people are already looking at something else.
Yeah.
Or they might never get it because, you know, radio signals might not be omnidirectional.
Mm.
It's a very nerdy comparison, but I think you have to find the trajectory, like the direction where you want to send your messages to. You have to focus on a target audience.
Yeah.
So finding the right marketing method and applying that is actually really hard.
Yeah.
And you have to find people who trust you, mm-hmm. and who will vouch for your product.
Yeah, and who you trust, of course.
Yep.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. But the blog post talks about like the main way to do the iterative process of an MVP, the modern way of doing MVP, where you don't keep everything black boxed,
mm-hmm.
but use your users, use your audience to actually collect feedback,
yeah.
and create a product that is competitive enough or outcompetes the competitors.
Yeah, I mean, in between all these steps, there's like constant user research.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a one-off thing. You constantly have to look and ask people like, hey, is this, you know,
yeah.
going the right direction? Does this work for you? What do you miss? All those things. Like you can't, yeah. It's a continuous process.
Yeah, and they use the wait list as a method to keep track and invite users to work along with you on the app, because mm-hmm. it's kind of a collaboration effort.
Yeah, and like they handpicked specific people who, you know, were the most valuable for them, I guess. Like, so was it directors or how to call them, managers of like small startups, for example? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the core audience for this app, right? Like big businesses, like, I don't know, Google, for example, is not going to
switch to linear. Probably not.
Because they will get an invite, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, like picking those specific people out and allowing them access to your application is very smart.
I think, like, to be honest, if linear is, well, they probably are, but if they are, say they are still developing,
mm-hmm.
and they still want to improve and they want to increase their market share, like how many people use their
app. Reach, I guess.
They might want to now that it's an established product and it's mature enough, they might want to focus on Google's managers.
Yeah.
So that's a cool thing to imagine, because you don't want to start with them, and that's not your target audience, and it's probably hard to reach.
Yeah.
But that's a different point. My point is they want their target audience to be tiered,
mm-hmm.
or categorized and then invited at a certain point in the maturity or the process of their development.
Yeah.
So if you have a wait list, what does that mean? Usually it's just like based on emails,
mm-hmm.
you have some invite only things, but that's basically the same thing where you send out, you know, an email to users. They get invited. The initial set of people have to be manually invited, and then it starts rolling from there. But let's focus on just an open subscription or wait list.
Yeah.
You can't, like, I have an app that I tried to launch, or we're still like developing it, and we only used email as the wait list input.
Yeah.
So we didn't have any other information about the user except for their email, which to me was like, oh, that's good. We don't have any like private info.
Yeah.
No first name, last name. But I still don't know who the hell is subscribing or is joining the wait list.
Yeah. So you don't know if they are valuable as the first users. And yeah, you can't really pick their brain, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might even be like spam or just someone who's not even really interested in the product itself or like some of the features it does.
I think my biggest problem is when I want feedback for a certain feature of our app, how do I reach the right people?
Yeah.
And how do I know that the person I'm talking to will use this?
Yeah.
Because
And it's in the right, you know, audience for a minimal viable product, I guess.
That too. If they are, because when you're initially launching, even with like the modern way of MVP, you're still launching your product with a currently limited set of features.
Yeah.
Is the group you're inviting, is it happy enough to be working in that kind of environment where you're missing a lot of key features from other apps or competitors?
Yeah. So picking users that fit your current stack of features, like that makes a lot of sense. They will be happy enough, at least.
Yeah.
So Linear, they created a few questions, I guess. So when you applied for the waitlist, they asked you stuff like, what's the size of your company? What's your role in the company? What product management solution are you currently using? The version control system, what version control system are you using? Why do you want to try Linear? And what's your pet peeve with current solutions? I think that's a great question too, because, you know, just that single question will create a lot of ideas for you, or maybe you already have features planned, you know, that they, you know, they will solve their pet peeves.
Yep.
But I mean, all these questions are great, like the size of the company too, like inviting people over who are like, I don't know, two or three people in their company, it doesn't make a lot of sense to start with them, I guess, because
I don't know, maybe it does because you have a limited feature set.
Yeah, maybe too.
Some big startups have already like made a name with only a handful of developers.
I think it's kind of interesting too. I was thinking about it, like I reading this article too. I don't think Linear was necessarily like the idea was not to replace Jira, for example.
Yeah, they outcompete the competitors. Who you mean?
Yeah, I mean I don't think their goal was to like be the biggest, you know, issue tracking software on the planet or something like that, you know, have the most users or whatever. I don't think that was their goal. And I think that's also, I think, a good way to start, right? Yeah. And if it kind of naturally goes there eventually, I think that's better than from the start, you know, pick that goal and try to work towards that, because then you'll probably skip a lot of, you know, steps in between that are necessary to build a solid base for your company.
It's a cool idea because even Linear's design, like when I first saw Linear's website, it was like it was catered for a person like me.
Yeah. Not the marketing people.
Yeah, exactly. I honestly, when you said like the project manager, I initially think Linear was meant for the developers instead of the managers.
Yeah.
People who are technically inclined to like look at software and they have requirements that are different from managers. Managers are maybe like all about, I want the complete overview with all
flow charts and whatever. Yeah.
Developers just want a very simple and smooth ticketing system with like a Kanban or you know, columns to put all your items in, and they want it to be smooth, fast, and they want it to be connected to GitHub.
Yeah.
That's all. Like that's the MVP for a developer.
Yeah.
And it feels like even their design, mm-hmm. when I landed on their website, their design was like catered. It reflected their user audience, but also yeah. themselves, because they themselves are developers.
Yeah.
And they created something for developers, yeah. by developers. I think that was their initial slogan a long time ago.
I also kind of remember something like that, but.
Yes. So if you go to like linear.app, and I don't know if you're a developer, but I get like, ooh.
Yeah, this looks great.
Yeah. There's something about it where I feel like you're just looking at like a very detailed manual of a more technical
yeah.
thing. You're like looking behind the scenes almost. I like that. And they still have their selling points, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it looks great. It's smooth and it's clean.
Yeah, it's just it's not commercial, right?
I mean, yeah, exactly.
It doesn't like, it's in no way does it look like Jira, for example, you know, but like
over the top marketing,
yeah, like big company marketing, and like, you know,
it looks more like a documentation page, know yeah. what I mean?
Yeah.
And it looks very technical, and there's a lot of text, but it's also, it's like designed in a subtle way. Mm-hmm. It's not like flashing colors and pop-ups and stuff.
Yeah, and also there are no, like, how do you call it, like overused ways to mm-hmm. you know, communicate stuff.
Exactly. They have just screenshots of their product.
Yeah, it's just very simple. Like, there's no fluff.
Yeah, and I think what I wanted to highlight here is just, if you know your target audience and you can from day one reflect that in your design mm-hmm. and your application, you can also gain a following passively. If you, as a developer, stumble upon this website, you stumble upon this like in 2019, 2020. Mm-hmm. I don't remember when they launched, but it's like a couple years ago now.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I feel like I've found something that speaks close to me.
Yeah.
It's not something huge. It's not a big learning curve. There's no jargon that I don't understand. It's just the bare bones, and I want to use this for my team.
Yeah.
At least for myself.
Yeah, exactly. Like for me, the first thing that made me like convinced that this is, you know, great software, and I've convinced multiple people to use it too in the past. And what I use as the main reason to use it is like, it's so fast and it just yeah. works. Like it does everything you want it to do. It's not like, it's not slow when you create new tickets. It doesn't like immediately,
yep.
you know, everything is like, it just works. And it sounds very stupid to yeah. say like, oh, I'm so happy that this piece of software just works, you know, but for some reason, for some software, it's just very hard to yeah. achieve that. Like the amount of times I've had with Jira where I created a ticket and it just, mm-hmm. it stopped creating it or didn't save properly. Yep. Or I had to rewrite the description, you know, multiple times,
yep.
stuff like that. And it's like, you know, you don't want that. And I think maybe a lot of people are more okay with that. Maybe, you know.
So yeah, it's just like people are okay with software being crap nowadays.
Yeah, they work around the problems that it has. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of ridiculous, yep. to be honest, because, you know,
yeah.
if your main goal is to create tickets, then why are your tickets not being created properly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Yeah. But so just the main point I want to make is, even without, you know, direct marketing to me, mm-hmm. I don't think there was an ad. I don't even remember how I stumbled upon it directly.
I think like maybe Reddit or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It's like there was already a user base. Or
a very small one, I yeah, think. But
that was passionate enough where yeah. All you had to do was just link the website,
mm-hmm.
and if you had the right channel,
yeah,
you could reach those people that are interested.
Yeah.
And it is not a designed way of reaching. It's a very, there's a word for that, where
yeah.
organic.
Organic.
There's
yes.
a very organic way of marketing,
yeah.
that is based around needs and based around passion,
mm-hmm.
for the project. And you create a community that is automatically going to share the word.
Yeah. I think it's also kind of interesting that it's very hard to find Linear online, as in,
yeah,
when you're looking at, like, you know, issue tracking software to use or something like that,
yeah,
you'll never see linear coming, you know, seeing that anywhere, I guess, these words, I guess. But I think they just nailed their target audience.
Yeah.
Like, searching for an issue tracking software, I don't think that's something that a very technical person will do necessarily. It's more like a project manager who will do that. And they might, you know, be more interested in Jira and Zendesk and whatever all the others are. So, yeah, again, I think Linear kind of nailed it with the way they find and grab their audience.
What is Linear's main selling point or main workflow? Is it issue tracking?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's not project management?
No, I don't think so. Because, like, there's like one graph you can get in Linear.
Yeah.
And I mean, in Jira, you can get like 20 different burn down charts and, I don't know, all those. So I don't think it's project management. But that's the thing. I think Linear is just made for small teams of developers to build something together. And not necessarily be managed by, you know, a large group of people.
It's so weird. I looked up both project management software and issue tracking software.
Yeah, you can't find anything, right?
Where is Linear?
Yeah, exactly.
Like the top three, and even on Wikipedia, it's not mentioned on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
What is going on? How do we... I feel like Linear is all around us as
like, a developer.
Yeah, as a developer, I know exactly... Like, I don't think it's hard to find people who know about Linear, but for some reason, the top three, maybe even top four, I'm like looking for the word Linear on those pages. And there's like top 10 best issue tracking software, 15 best issue tracking software of 2024.
Nowhere to be found.
Why? And it's they still have reached me, and I'm an advocate for them. So maybe to go back to our points, yeah, if you find the right way, you will have people who are passionate about your product. Mm-hmm. And so the next step after you have your waiting list, how do you actually invite them? How do you invite the people that you want in that current phase of your product?
Mm-hmm.
So with those questions, like what's the size of your company? What's your role? You can create a list and categorize all the people and invite the correct ones. And you made a good point where you said, I don't think, I'm quoting you right now, I don't think they were inviting smaller companies with like two or three people.
Mm-hmm.
I have the opposite idea where they invited people they know personally and they have startups. Like, I know a few people who are rich and are dev savvy, and they like to start startups.
Mm.
I don't know. I think you know who I'm talking about. One person who also had a startup.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I would maybe try to reach them
and
be like, hey, I'm starting this company and I know you have a small team and I wonder how you manage your software. And it's like a more personal approach. And I think it's very, very useful to have people who are already in your life, who are connected in your life, like you and I. If I would start an app, you're one of the few first people I would contact, because even if you're not my direct target audience, if you have any kind of feedback, it's more valuable and more personal, more honest.
Well, I mean, they kind of touch on that, right?
Yeah.
Because, let's see. Yeah, in the article here, it says, don't just ask your friends, though. So when they started and they did that, their friend came back and said their current solution is fine enough and they don't need all the features that Linear, you know, made Linear unique. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe that was not a good friend.
Exactly. I feel like you have to pick your right audience.
Yeah.
And not everyone has an eye for what is actually a requirement for software.
Yeah.
Some people are happy with... Again,
Jira.
Yeah, or like literally like an Excel sheet.
Yeah.
You can share an Excel sheet and keep your project like issues there.
Oh, yes. I've seen that.
I don't know. At least Excel has multiplayer functionality.
I guess, yeah.
You know, Excel 365 or
Google Sheets.
Google Sheets.
Yeah.
So it's already built in there. You don't want to mail that over.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah. Well, was there a time people did that? I think there was.
Yeah, of course. It has to.
Where people were like, yeah, I updated the project sheet.
Yeah, here it is.
Attached in the email.
Yeah. And then someone else also updated it in their own, and then they also send it. Yeah.
And the project manager has to keep
Someone has to merge it. Yeah. Great.
So after you invite your tiered target audience, the next step is to gather feedback and like let them use your app, gather feedback, and in the end repeat the cycle of inviting, collecting feedback, and addressing the issues.
Yeah, and also like, so you create a new feature in the meantime, and then you try to find people on the waiting list that are interested in that specific feature that you just added, for example, and you allow them into your app, and then gather their feedback on that specific feature. Build something new again, based on what pet peeves were for others in the waitlist, for example. Yep. Create that feature, invite more again, and just keep going that way.
At a certain point, your software, your product is, it has a rich enough feature list where you can invite just general target audience.
Yeah, or just open it up, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. So the article mentions a few next steps, and I think we should kind of wrap it up here.
Yes.
So after you do that, you have to narrow down your initial audience and build for them. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a recap of what we said. Figure out who you're building the product for and make the target audience as small as possible before expanding.
Yeah.
So not just your friends, maybe, but you do want to have a very small personal target audience at the start, I think, because the more you have, the more varied your responses will be.
Mm-hmm.
So having a very strict list of a small target audience will also increase the kind of feedback. Like it will be more qualitative and more focused on certain aspects of your app.
Yeah, and again, I think that's also that community part, right? Because keeping it small and like, talking to everyone almost personally or maybe not even almost, but like talking to them personally. It will create an investment from them, like in your app and in your company, and they will, they will spread the word again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah.
The next step would be to build and leverage your wait list. The wait list is the grinding stone with which you can sharpen your idea into something truly valuable that will succeed at market. So use it effectively.
Yeah, I mean, eventually you'll have to like rip the waitlist band-aid off, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder what happens then, like if you're open and everyone is having access to it, how do you still keep gathering data?
That's a good
with
point.
The right information and the right feedback, right? Because you'll receive a lot of noise, I think, when you open the floodgates.
I think one of the main methods I've seen is having a little, hey, how did this go?
Yeah.
Question at the end of a workflow.
Or maybe, again, they still pick specific companies from their like user base, right? Yeah. I mean, they can see. I remember when you create a new workspace in Linear or maybe a new account, they ask you the same questions, I think.
Yep.
So like, how big is your company? What have you used before? And all that stuff. So they can probably still use that to contact you and gather data that they want. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, keeping that kind of sign up or kind of onboarding flow where you still have the information to categorize and reach that target audience is very important, I think.
Yeah. So instead of just an email and your name and password or whatever, also gather all that data.
Yeah. Have you also seen what I've talked about where you're creating a new ticket and at the end it's like, hey, how did this go? Like a little notification. Do you have any feedback?
I haven't seen that on Linear.
No, but in other software that has happened. And I'm like, so sometimes they also have like a little, how much would you rate this process?
Yeah, but I don't know. To be honest, I always click those away. I've never used those.
It's weird, right?
Because it feels like, a lot of times, especially when you're creating a ticket, for example, I don't have time to also do that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's like just one click on a star or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's always like an open text area and you have to fill in a lot of stuff. And I'm like, I'm currently working and I'm trying to fix this, you know? So I don't think those really work, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
it might gather some data, but I'm going to, you know, go out on a limb and I guess that most of those are negative when they are filled in.
Yep.
Because you're frustrated, something doesn't work. You know, you see a feedback thing, you're like, ah, now I got you. Let's, you know.
Yep. It's like, I hate this.
Yeah.
0 stars, 1 star.
Exactly. Because that's what always happens. Like, positivity is very hard to, you know, spread, I guess. And negativity is a lot easier on, you know, everywhere.
People would communicate their negativity quicker than their positivity.
Yeah.
Because if you're positive, you're satisfied, you've finished your thing.
Your thing.
And just out of the box, like, there's a thing. When I order pizza at this place called New York Pizza here, they always send me a little, like, literally, how much would you rate this?
Yeah.
Like, if I would order two pizzas, each pizza has its own star.
Okay.
And they would also have a star for, like, a rating for the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I honestly, when I'm happy or not, not every single time, but I would definitely use those every now and then. If I'm like, oh my God, that pizza was amazing, I would give it 5 stars. If it's lacking something, I would reduce it and just...
Yeah.
But that's like after I ate the pizza and after I open up my phone and receive an email. So they timed that perfectly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, if they would send that like when you're still waiting on the pizza, you know, exactly. No one's going to fill that in.
So what I'm trying to say is I think it can work effectively, that kind of questionnaire or...
Yeah, but I think it's like it's not used in a proper way.
Yeah, but there are ways. So yeah, maybe that's a cool way to implement that.
Yeah.
Next step is to trust your gut and validate demand with your users.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think this is also when you ask, like, when do you open the floodgates to the general audience? I think that is also a bit of like trusting your gut, but you can interview, you can gather feedback and be like, okay, so would you use this product that we have? Would you use it?
Yeah. I mean, I think like if you have a small user base
and
you keep asking them questions and like, hey, would you like more or what are you missing? And they're all kind of, you know, satisfied with it and there's no like real big complaints.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can almost assume that it's fine to open it up.
Yeah. That's also part of the next step, which we don't have in this list, but monetization.
Yeah.
That's probably a really important one if you're... you know, selling your product. It's how do you know if people will pay for your product?
Yeah, and I think what Linear did is very interesting, how they approached that. But because instead of like suddenly going from free to paid for their existing users, the whole time they've had an option in your settings or something where there was a button and you could, pay whatever you want. Like as an appreciation, I guess.
Yeah, more like a donation button.
More like a donation button, yeah.
That's so cool.
I think that's because if they would do that, you know, you immediately know, oh, this user appreciates what we've built and they're willing to pay something for it. So they are probably willing to pay a monthly fee for it, you know?
Yeah. It's also interesting that with that the option of being able to pay.
Yeah.
And you're already categorized in a certain target audience.
Yep.
You can tell which kind of people
are willing to pay.
Which kind of companies.
Yep.
How many people are involved? You know, the size of your company, what roles. So they can also market their product to those kind of people because that's probably where they will get their revenue from.
Yeah, and
very very specific target, right?
It's very really, specific. Yeah.
Really important if you're marketing your product online.
And again, like one of the questions they ask is like, which solution are you currently using? So if they know that you're currently using Jira and they're satisfied with Linear right now and they are, you know,
happy to
donating or whatever,
happy to transition maybe.
Yeah, I mean, like Jira is very expensive, so they can just, you know, anywhere below Jira probably is you know, fine for them.
If it works effectively enough and they are willing to switch.
Yeah.
Google AdSense, maybe. If you search Jira, you get like the top result. It's like looking for something better than Jira, try Linear.
Try Linear, I don't know. I don't think they do any like big...
I don't know.
Advertisements. But
I haven't seen them in a while because I haven't used my browser without adblock.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people are browsing the web.
Developers.
Yeah, sure.
I think a lot of people are using just their browsers without adblock. A lot of them, yeah. I know a lot of people who don't use adblock.
Hmm, interesting.
But they're usually not tech savvy. They don't know what they're supposed to install.
They're
happy with waiting a few seconds for YouTube.
I think this is, yeah, I don't know. We should wrap up. But yep. I think it's also, I just thought of a topic we can talk about in the future, I guess.
Mm. So
it's kind of related to that advertisement thing, because there's a lot of like fear mongering on the internet.
Ooh, yes.
I think that's an interesting thing.
On social media and stuff. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And I think especially in like the tech space, there's a lot of fear mongering.
In the tech space?
Tech space, yes. Whoa. Like VPN providers saying like, hey, if you install our VPN, you're safe on the web, you know?
Yeah.
No one will...
You're completely private and yes, anonymous.
No worries. And oh, you're getting sick from the internet by not installing our VPN. Stuff like that.
Whoa. What?
Anyway, yes, I've seen weird stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I think that was a good overview of the blog, and our thoughts are in this episode. Like interwoven.
Yes.
Exactly. So yeah, I hope you guys had a good time listening and you maybe learned a few things.
Yeah. And if you have an MVP or a great idea, I guess, just let us know. We'll gladly join and try it out. If we're the target audience, that's important.
You can try. We are a channel and maybe we can share the word.
Spread the word.
If you have any feedback about our episodes, or you want to just tell us that this episode was garbage, this episode was good, let us know. If you have another opinion of what MVP is, let us know. We're curious what other people in the world think about the MVP concept. Is it still viable to use that even as a concept? Maybe we should go back to waterfall.
Oh no.
And build things in the dark and then suddenly launch it like, oh, hallelujah.
Yeah, it's born.
There are different ways. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's actually going back to like how Apple did their product launches with like, it's just out of nowhere. And sometimes they leak things on purpose and stuff. I don't know. Maybe that is like the more modern way with viral.
I do think that works a lot of times.
Viral marketing way.
I hate viral marketing. But,
you know, it might be very effective, and you can have a garbage product, but if it went viral, people will pay for it to check it out.
This is why people buy like shit on Temu and
you
know, all those shitty websites, to be honest. But you know,
well, that's a topic for another episode.
Another topic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, guys.
All right. Bye bye.